Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thanks so much for your support. Well, coming up later on in the program, we will bring you the conclusion of the Valentine matter. But first up, it's time for part four of Call for a Columnist.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense. Based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
I was piling up quite a score of odds for a harmless columnist who wanted nothing but to hang on to his popularity with the 4 million readers of his column, Dynamite with Johnny Lane. As if it wasn't enough to be kidnapped and forced to write statements libeling the chief of police and Senator Rowland, head of the Vice Investigation Committee, statements which brought a $2 million damage suit against my paper and just incidentally looked like putting me behind bars. As if that wasn't enough, I had to walk into the apartment of that heavenly hunk of humanity, Simone, the Adagio dancer, only to find her partner, Simon, proposing to make a national hero out of me by murdering me. I sat there, hardly believing my eyes, as he slowly took off his tie.
Just relax, Mr. Lane. It will be all over in a moment. A tie makes such an excellent weapon for a man like me. You have seen our act, mine and Simone, how I throw her across the stage. She's all in the wrists and fingers, you know.
No, I didn't know.
And the same thing applies to strangling. She's all in the wrists and fingers.
So you took care of Albert Ferraro?
Of course. Just as I am going to take care of you.
Ah, the situation is well in hand, I see, Simon.
Simone!
Well, my poor little Johnny. It seems that we shall never get around to having a quiet evening to ourselves.
You're part of it, too.
But of course. You are just in time, Simone, for the climax.
Yeah, just in time!
No! Oh, what do you know? I knocked him cold.
I don't believe it. A rabbit like you?
I don't believe it either. But I like it. Come here, baby.
No.
Yes, baby. I don't know why I never thought of this before.
What are you going to do?
What no gentleman ever does to a lady. For a moment, I just stood there, looking at the pair of them, laid out on the floor like fillets of fish on a slab. I didn't know what had come over me, but whatever it was, I was enjoying it. I employed my newfound personality in a number of phone calls, and half an hour later, the door opened and my ex-bodyguard, Tony Spencer, walked in.
Well, Johnny, so you decided you couldn't get along without me after all.
Well, you could put it that way. Actually, I called your boss, Mr. Arts, because I need someone to look after a couple of people for me.
You mean bump them off?
No, just keep an eye on them.
Where are they?
In the bath.
Both of them?
That's right.
You mind if I go and take a look?
Not at all. Help yourself.
Thanks. I don't get this. One catfish.
Recognize them?
It's that Adagio act. Who tied them up and put them in the bath for you?
I did.
You?
Me. I am a changed man since you last saw me.
You know, I can almost believe it. There is something different about you.
I've decided I'm really the masterful He-Man type. In fact, I've decided that I'm going to call Captain Stanger at police headquarters, get him to come over and take charge of these characters, and then you and I...
Yes, John?
You and I will go out for a little celebration, and I'm not taking no for an answer.
I'm not saying no, Johnny.
your evening paper, monsieur.
Oh, thanks, Jules. Here, Tommy, take a look at this. Right in the front page.
But, Johnny, this says that you're going to prove that every allegation you made about Senator Rowland and the chief of police was true.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're going to do it tomorrow at the hearing of the investigation committee.
Uh-huh. I thought I'd have trouble with my editor getting him to run that, but I convinced him that since the paper was being sued for $2 million already, he may as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb.
Son, you're amazing.
I think so, too.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Lane. I could not help overhearing.
Yeah? What is it, Joe?
If you really intend to prove your accusations, Mr. Lane, I think I can help you.
Yeah? How?
We are not immune to racketeers here. We have to pay our tribute to stay in business. But if you have the courage to defy them, I feel I should have the courage to support you. And I have receipts in my office that would interest you immensely.
You have?
If you could spare a few moments and come to my office, I will give them to you.
Well, thanks, Jules. Thanks a lot. You'll excuse me, won't you, Tony?
Well, there is no need why the young lady should not accompany us.
Oh, okay. Come on, honey.
This way, Monsieur Lane. Mademoiselle. Here we are. Please go in, Monsieur Lane. I have a gun at your back, and I would not like a corpse littering my corridor.
Joe, what is this?
Inside, Monsieur Lane. You too, mademoiselle.
Hello, Johnny.
Thelma.
That's right. Pleased to see me?
In two words, no.
Thelma, it is true. What it says in his column. He threatens to prove his accusations.
The accusations you made me write, baby.
I wish you'd kept your nose out, Johnny. If Simon hadn't bungled his job, you'd have been dead before you could have written that.
Yeah, but he did bungle his job. And he's now tucked away quietly waiting for the inquiry to start tomorrow when he's going to do a little talking.
But you're going to tell us where to find him.
I don't think I am.
That's one for the books. Johnny Lane, a top guy. You're a lily, Johnny. You'd faint if anyone swatted a fly in front of you.
Would I?
Joel!
Let her go or I'll shoot.
No, you won't.
Nice work, Tony.
Would you like me to break his arm, Johnny?
No!
Not yet, honey. Now then, I'm at the business end of the gun. I'll have a few answers. You, Jules, where do you fit in? You're the leader of the opposition that Simon told me about, huh?
Yes, I handled the distribution angle for Roland for a long time, but it got too good, as far as he was concerned. He'd switched some of it to Lou Prager at the Blue Diamond. My takings were cut by half. Then when Thelma came along and put me in the picture, I thought it was time I did something.
You'll do something, all right. A nice long stretch. As for you, Thelma, you'll fry.
What are you talking about?
The Ferraro killing. The nylon stocking that strangled him was a sure clue that a woman killed him.
That's a lie. I never killed him. It was Simon.
Well, I think he'll say it was you. And his partner, Simone, will back him up. That's 2-1.
But I didn't kill him. I swear it.
Oh, I believe you. I know Simon did it. He likes strangling. But I don't think anyone else will believe you.
Johnny, I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know about the senator and about O'Byrne, but don't send me up on a murder rap. I'll talk, Johnny. I'll talk.
It was quite a scene in the courtroom next morning. A crowd packed the public benches, and up on the platform sat the investigation committee, headed by Senator Rowland. An imposing figure, gray-haired, substantial, the complete picture of an honest, straightforward American politician. He made his opening speech, a blend of fancy platitudes and phony patriotism. Then he got around to me.
The chief protagonist of the accusations made against the committee, and in particular against the chief of police O'Byrne, is here today. And so this committee has decided that in the interests of justice, this matter should be dealt with first of all. I hereby call John Lane to appear before the committee. Have you a lawyer, Mr. Lane? You're entitled to legal advice.
I don't need any, thanks.
Very well. You are John Lane.
Yes.
You're employed as a journalist.
A columnist. That's one step up or down, depending how you feel about it.
Certain statements have appeared in your column, and as a result of them, certain writs have been issued against your newspaper and yourself for damages for libel. Is that correct?
I understand so.
Then, Mr. Lane, you will agree that these statements of yours are either true or false.
Naturally.
If they are false, I'm wasting the committee's time in questioning you.
Presumably.
And if they are true, it's been up to you to prove.
Quite.
Very good, Mr. Lane. How do you propose to do that?
I'd like to ask some questions, if I may.
To whom do you wish to address your question?
To the chief of police, to you, Senator, and various other people.
Very well, you may call whom you please, Mr. Lane.
Thank you. I'd like to call Chief of Police Michael O'Byrne. Chief, I'm not too good on formal procedure, so I guess we can take it as read that you're Chief of Police and your name is Michael O'Byrne.
Very well.
Chief, how much do you earn a year?
Senator, do I have to answer that question?
It's public knowledge, Chief. Anyone can find out by reading the city ordinances. Your salary is $10,000 a year.
If you know, why ask?
And you earn $10,000 a year.
Yes.
No more?
Of course not.
Does your wife work?
No.
Mr. Lynn, we have not unlimited time. I'm afraid I don't see the point of these questions.
You will, Senator. Now, Chief, if your income is $10,000 a year and your wife doesn't work, how is your wife able to deposit $2,000 a month into her bank account?
It's a lie!
Not according to this statement obtained from the manager of a bank by Captain Stanger of the police department. According to this statement, your wife has at the moment a total of some $28,000 in her account, and $2,000 are paid in regularly on the 8th day of every month. The deposits are made by a Mr. Smith.
Mr. Lane, there is probably some quite simple explanation of this. I cannot tolerate the chief being put through the hoop just for the sake of satisfying your craving for publicity.
Very well, Senator. I'm prepared to waive any further questioning of the chief of police. Instead, I'd like to call Thelma Radley.
What?
If you look, you'll see her coming in now together with three people who are here to prove my statements. Will Miss Radley step forward, please?
With pleasure.
Tell me, wouldn't do this?
Wouldn't I? My name is Thelma Radley, and until 6 weeks ago, I lived in an apartment on Dane Street, which was wholly maintained by Senator Rowland. During the previous 6 months when I was with him, he made me his confidant concerning many of his business affairs. I learned that he controlled the vice rackets of this city. The chief of police was paid $2,000 a month to cooperate with Rowland and leave the rackets alone, and...
This investigation committee is postponed indefinitely. Captain Stanger, you're ordered to arrest the chief of police and with him Senator Rowland. Charges will be preferred later. And get them out of here, fast, before they get lynched.
Oh, Johnny, you were wonderful.
You think so, Tony?
Oh, yes. The way you handle things in that courtroom, why, they ought to make you district attorney.
Say, that might be a bad idea, Fred. I don't see why I shouldn't run for DA.
I've got a better proposition.
Yeah? What?
How'd you like to be my bodyguard permanently?
Miss Spencer, is this a proposal of marriage?
Uh-huh. What do you say?
No.
I was afraid of that. I hate to do this, Johnny, but I've made up my mind. Don't worry, honey. By the time you come to, it'll be all over, and you'll like it. That's a promise.
This is Carter Brown. You know, there are some stories that you get a real kick out of writing. Call for a Columnist was one of them. I only hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Next week, I'll be back to present another of my books for you. This one is called Assignment Trouble, and it has an Australian background combining journalism and public relations. The combination which is just plain murder. So for now, this is Carter Brown saying, be seeing you, I hope.
In Call for a Columnist, you heard Wendy Playfair as Tony, and as Johnny Lane, you heard our star, Joe McCormick. The Carter Brown Mystery Theater, from the best-selling novels by Carter Brown, is dramatized and directed by Maurice Travers for Grace Gibson Radio Productions.
Welcome back! The story is resolved by Johnny Lane having a fundamental change in character. That's very convenient. An interesting conclusion, to say the least. I always thought that a lot of these Carter Brown mysteries, they were kind of the equivalent of the spaghetti westerns, and this would probably be Exhibit A in that thought pattern. We do have listener comments and feedback on this. Tom sends in a tweet. Hey, in Call for a Columnist, in the middle of the episodes, was that the same music as Barry Craig's theme? Certainly sounds like it to me. It sounds like it, or a variation of it being used in the middle as a bridge. If there are any better musical experts out there, I'm all ears. All right, well, now it's time for today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, as we wrap up The Valentine Matter, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Hey, what are you doing at the Valentine house?
Get a car out here quick, Inspector. Terry Valentine's just been shot. Two guys
now
showed
slow
up...
Slow down. When did all this happen?
A few seconds ago.
Ambulance?
No good, DeBaca. She died in my arms.
Oh. Well, do you think they're still around there?
They must be. I'm going looking.
Now, wait a minute. This is a police matter. You stay put. I'll have a car there in 5 minutes and you can... Johnny, I heard that. Your gun... Now, look, you're all wound up. Don't do anything.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of further expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Dan Valentine, ex-gangster and, of course, your policyholder. But then his wife was killed, too. Then his lawyer. Then his daughter. The girl that I... 30 seconds after Terry Valentine died in my arms, I was stumbling down the gravel path that led from her house to the road. It had all happened so suddenly, I can't say that what I did from there on or what I felt was entirely rational. All I know is I hadn't heard a car leave the area, which meant the two killers were still somewhere nearby. Then in the dim light, I saw the car. A man was climbing into it. Hey! Hey, stop! Stop or I'll shoot! Stop! Get out of there. Get out of there and get your hands up.
I'm a hit. I'm afraid to move.
Come on, get out.
Come on. I'm coming.
You too. Come on.
There's no use on him, mister. Used up. You got him real good. I need a doctor. Help me get to a
doctor. Stop right there.
Doctor.
Stand still.
You pretty tough fella.
What's your name?
Sisto.
Sisto what?
It's good enough for you. I need a doctor, bad.
Listen. Tell it to me. Tell it to me right now. If you don't tell it to me now, you'll never tell it to anybody. Tell it!
No, tell it! I need a doctor.
Tell it!
I die first.
Johnny! What is this? Who's he?
He's gonna kill me.
Now, you better give me that gun, Johnny. State will take care of him. Thanks.
I should have done it. I wanted to do it.
I know, son. Come on, let's get out of here.
But I didn't get out of there. I waited around while they dug the body of the other man out of the smashed-up car, and while they carried the still, limp form of Teresa Valentine away. She was the third member of the family who had died violently within 3 days.
Sorry about it, Donna.
Inspector, I was hoping I might have been wrong. But she wasn't dead.
Oh, you weren't wrong. Which one shot her?
Huh?
The dead one? Or the one we still got in the hospital?
Oh, I don't know. Both of them, I guess.
You don't feel like talking, but I'm just trying to pin it down.
Well, what about him?
Can't get much out of him so far. He's in pretty bad shape.
Let me ask him some questions, Inspector. I'm no police officer. I don't have to obey any rules.
Now take it easy, kid. You were about to do that once, and we'd be holding you for murder if you'd have gone ahead. I know how you feel about Teresa Valentine.
Has he said anything at all?
Nothing. We found papers on him and the other one that makes them brothers, Sisto and Darby Chianti, from New York. So far, there doesn't seem to be any connection with the Valentines. But people like Valentine make a lot of enemies. But that girl doesn't figure.
Yeah.
I know you talked to her a lot these last couple of days, Johnny. What'd you say?
Oh, nothing that had anything to do with this. You know yourself, she didn't even know her name was Valentine until her father got shot at.
Yeah, that could have been an act.
And you could have been 20 feet tall.
Just trying.
Try with that punk you got upstairs in the hospital.
We will, Johnny. We will. Just... pardon me. Johnny, I got bad news. Maybe I spoke too soon.
Why?
Sisto Chianti died 5 minutes ago.
Expense account, item 10, $10, car rental. I went out to the Valentine house once more.
Oh, Mr. Dover.
Hello, Mrs. Iacino.
Please come in. So many policemen, so many reporters. I've been trying to close the house.
Sure.
I know how you must feel. I mean about her. What of these Chianti brothers?
Well, we don't know much about them yet. The New York police are still doing a rundown on them. Don't let me stop you, whatever you're doing. I'll just look around if you don't mind.
All right.
Oh, well, one thing.
Yes?
Did Mr. Valentine make any provision for you?
Yeah. He thought of me. $1,000. Whatever he was, the man I knew was kind and good. And his sins had been forgiven him.
I spent 2 hours or better going from room to room, looking at the oils that Dan Valentine had painted. Pastoral scenes, happy scenes, gay scenes, all of them with colorful Italian backgrounds. I was thinking about that when I walked into Inspector DeBacca's office late that afternoon.
I don't get it, Johnny.
Don't get what?
Here. Just came from New York on the Chianti boys.
Oh?
They came to this country when they were 18 and 21. Both of them were naturalized citizens, lived with their father.
Records?
Not a thing, no trouble ever.
What else?
That's about it. New York police can't seem to locate their old man. Disappeared about a week ago, lived on the east side.
What's about him?
Well, that's another funny thing. He's taken out his papers and was due for an examination with the immigration people this week. They're looking for him, too.
We went out and had dinner together and talked about the case. It had been a strange one. The deaths were useless, the motives unknown. I parted company with Inspector DeBacca and went back to my hotel to trouble it out with sleep. About 11 o'clock, I had a phone call. Johnny Dollar.
This is DeBacca. Old man Chianti just showed up at our city morgue and wants to take his two sons back to New York for burial.
20 minutes later, I was standing in the coroner's office while Inspector DeBacca led a small, wizened old man into the room and sat him down on one of the chairs.
Mr. Chianti, it's Mr. Dollar.
How do you do?
Mr. Chianti.
I read about you. You killed my boys. Is it so?
Yes. They'd killed 4 other people.
I know. But...
why did they kill the Valentine family, Mr. Chianti? Why did they kill Conrad Webster, the lawyer? Do you know why?
See, I know.
Then tell me. They're all dead now.
I'm still alive, Mr. Dollar.
He refused to talk about his sons or any of their activities. DeBacca held him to answer to the immigration officials. He remained in his cell, silent and noncommittal to all visitors, including the chaplain. I appeared before the coroner's jury the following morning and was cleared of any charges. Pietro Chianti still had said nothing. And he looked at me as though he was going to keep on saying nothing. Mr. Chianti?
I see you, Mr. Dollar. More questions?
Dan Valentine's wife was your daughter, wasn't she? Wasn't she? All right, you don't have to admit it. I have a copy of the marriage license right here. It came from New York this morning.
She wasn't my daughter.
Is that all you have to say now?
I no talk.
Then I will, Mr. Chunty. Because your daughter, Mrs. Valentine, had a daughter herself, Teresa. A lovely, wonderful girl that your two sons killed. I happen to know that girl. I might have been in love with her, I don't know. But I do know...
She had to die, too.
What?
This Conrad Webster, Mr. Valentine, and my own daughter and granddaughter, they had to die. All bad.
You?
See, I order it.
You ordered it? And who are you? God?
I am the father. When a daughter marries a bad man, only bad can come from it. The granddaughter was then bad. He come to our village many years ago. Take her away. He and the man Webster help him. It lived with me. The stealing of my own flesh and blood. All this time it grow inside of me. I am old, but I keep on living. Only so I can come here and find him and destroy him. And her. And the daughter, and the lawyer man who helped him. And I destroyed them through my sons.
A whole family. Vendetta. Was that it?
If you like, Vendetta. He was a bad man who did bad things. Bad man. I smoke now. You have a cigar, eh?
The disposition of old Pietro Chianti is up to the Immigration Department. I didn't stay around New Orleans to learn the results of all the extensive examinations that would have to be completed to test his sanity. I'd had enough of the town. Expense account, item 11, $140.20, hotel and board. Item 12, $28, car rental miscellaneous. That includes flowers to the Valentine family. Item 13, same as item 1, $175. Transportation back home. Expense account total, $1,290.38. Remarks? Whenever I close my eyes, I can see a lovely girl standing at the bottom of a long, curving stairway. Smiling. Because I'm in the room. That's all. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be another exciting story for you beginning next Monday night.
Monday, the Lorco Diamond Matter. In which a trip to Algiers makes come with me to the Casbah sound like an invitation to a Sunday school picnic. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Lillian Baeff, Betty Lou Gerson, Barney Phillips, Will Wright, Forrest Lewis, Marvin Miller, Jay Novello, and Jack Moyles. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. What a great episode. You know, there aren't a ton gut-wrenching or really emotionally charged episodes, but this was clearly one, and I think it works so well. They really put this together from a dramatic standpoint very well, right from the first part of the story where Tabaka is talking to Johnny, and you hear the gun being cocked, and Johnny hanging up the phone. Just, you know, very powerful, right all the way up until the last moment, the note in that report. Just incredible job. I should mention that this was adapted from actually two separate Yours Truly Johnny Dollar episodes. This episode was based on Yours Truly Johnny Dollar episode, The San Antonio Matter, written by E. Jack Newman, and also on an episode of Nightbeat called Big John McMaster, from 1951, also by E. Jack Newman, who, of course, wrote this episode under the name of John Dawson. And really, this just continues to show what you can do with radio drama if given sufficient time. You know, it's remarkable, so many half-hour dramas, what they were able to do. But in this hour-plus of story time, they really don't waste any of it. So I think it was just absolutely a phenomenal job. Well, we turn now to listener comments and feedback, and Justin said, it's sad that there are no more George Valentine podcasts. The new Sherlock Holmes is not as good as the old one, so right now I'm listening to Johnny Dollar. Any other suggestions to what are any good detective shows besides the ones mentioned? Well, Justin, I hope you get some answers on Facebook. I'm a bad judge because I think all of them are pretty good. And I've actually been enjoying the more recent Sherlock Holmes than the ones we were playing previously with John Stanley. But to each their own. I think that if you don't enjoy the Sherlock Holmes series, be listening in about 11 weeks. We're going to begin the Nick Carter series on Thursdays, replacing Holmes. And then on Tuesday in 2 weeks, we'll be adding The Big Guy. And then 3 weeks after that, when The Big Guy's done, that will be replaced by Mr. Moto. And then we also have a review on the app from Zippy, who says, with so many apps out there, it is nice to find one that works and isn't loaded with ads. Very well put together, and the shows are great. Well, glad you're enjoying the app, Zippy. And that will finish up for today. A few programming notes. Join us tomorrow for the lineup, and then join us back here on Monday for a new Johnny Dollar adventure. And on Friday, we'll have another Carter Brown serial. In the meantime, be sure and fill out our listener survey, survey.greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.